What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, coming at you every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airways of SiriusXM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887, 866-96-POTUS. That is the number to call into the Stephen A. Smith Show. Lots of stuff to get into today. I've got a couple of people coming on as guests today that I'm looking very much forward in talking to. One of them is a former Capitol Hill officer by the name of Harry Dunn, who is a running for Congress. He's a candidate for Congress, running to represent Maryland's 5th Congressional District. He's coming on to the show. And, of course, Governor Andy Beshear out of Kentucky, twice elected governor of the great state of Kentucky. They'll both be on the show today. Lots of stuff to get into with them. Obviously, January 6th affects Harry Dunn tremendously. So he's one of the officers that survived that insurrection. That's what I call it. That's what most sane people do call it in this day and age, because we saw what we saw over television. We saw it live, and we know what it is. In the case of Governor Beshear, there's a lot to get into in terms of the Governor's Association, in terms of some things going on with ICE, along with other comments that he has made publicly, and get his feelings about that as well. Again, 866-96-POTUS is the number to call up. Interesting day. Breaking news over the last few minutes or so. And that breaking news essentially involves the fact that the House of Representatives in the United States narrowly passed the Save America Act in a 216 to 215 vote, mandating voter ID and proof of citizenship for federal elections. Okay? Apparently, rumors that Representative Thomas Massie cast a lone Republican vote against it is something that he's challenging, or at least he clarified. He said it's a false rumor that I voted against the Save America Act today. I'll vote for it when it comes to the floor. I voted against a quote-unquote rule that allows it to get a vote, etc. But that's what it is. So it's going to pass, the Save America Act. And for those of you who don't know, the Save America Act, or the SAVE Act, most commonly refers to today to the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act. It's a controversial proposed U.S. federal law focusing on changing voter registration requirements, essentially. That's what this comes down to. The Republicans are for it. The Democrats are adamantly against it. And you have what you have. That's one of the problems that's going on today. One of the other problems was Department of Justice, Attorney General Pam Bondi. She was on Capitol Hill just going at a bunch of people, okay? She wasn't messing around, because obviously she was live on Capitol Hill facing questions about the Jeffrey Epstein files, the 3 million pages that were released by the DOJ and the Trump administration, the fact that so much stuff was redacted, and that more stuff hasn't been released. Well, needless to say, she wasn't going to take the criticisms lying down. So for those people that haven't heard, Pam Bondi, the Attorney General, on Capitol Hill testifying against congressional representatives, you need to listen to it. Griff, take it away. Give me the first one, please.
Like former Prince Andrew, Donald Trump attended various parties with Jeffrey Epstein. I want to know, were there any underage girls at that party or at any party that Trump attended with Jeffrey Epstein?
This is so ridiculous, and that they are trying to deflect from all the great things Donald Trump has done. There is no evidence that Donald Trump has committed a crime. Everyone knows that. This has been the most transparent presidency. He's the one that asked that those files be released.
I'm reclaiming my time. I got your answer. You
President
said there's no evidence.
Chairman, please stop the clock.
Stop the clock. The legislation. This time
belongs to the gentleman from California.
Okay. I'm going to put up another document from a witness who called the FBI's National Threat Operations Center, because I believe you just lied under oath. There is ample evidence in the Epstein file.
Don't you ever accuse me of a crime.
I believe you just lied under oath, and this is all on videotape. You said there's no evidence of a crime. I'm showing you, here is a witness statement who called into the FBI's Threat Operations Center. He drove Donald Trump around in a limo. He overheard what Donald Trump said to Jeffrey on his cell phone. He was so angry, he was going to stop a limo and hurt Donald Trump. And he met a girl who said she was raped by Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. She later had her head blown off, and officers at the scene said that could not have been suicide.
See, ladies and gentlemen, that was Representative Ted Lieu. I believe that's how it's pronounced. But she was on the Hill. She got into it with him. Pam Bondi got into it with Republican Rep. Thomas Massie. She got into it with another Democrat, North Carolina representative, another North Carolina representative. And, of course, you know, Jasmine Crockett and her got into it as well. My question is this. How does anything benefit? How does any of this benefit us? Bunch of he said, she said. Okay, President Trump is the most transparent president there's ever been. This is Pam Bondi talking. Obviously, the Democrats feel otherwise. Obviously, they feel he's a pathological liar. Obviously, they think he has an abundance of things to hide, if not for himself, but to protect others when it comes to the Epstein files. Pam Bondi is on Capitol Hill testifying. And whatever veracity that's coming out of her mouth, there is no doubt it gets tainted by the inordinate amount of times that she said nothing when he didn't appear to be that truthful. She said nothing when he didn't appear to be that transparent. She said nothing when he originally took the position. Why is the Epstein file so much of a big issue when he campaigned on it otherwise? See, what I want to do is I want to use this opportunity before we have guests coming on this show to make sure everybody understands where I'm coming from. I don't give a damn about much of this. I do care when it comes to the Epstein files in terms of little girls that were sexually abused. A crime was committed, and any elected official, anybody that we know about that is guilty of those crimes need to be dealt with. They need to be punished. There's no question about that. And I'm certainly not trying to shove that aside like that's some insignificant issue. Their lives will forever be changed. And our compassion, our empathy, our sympathy, and everything else that comes with it from a sympathetic perspective needs to be thrown in their direction. And we need to be looking out for them. There is no question about that. But if you don't have hardcore evidence and you're just on Capitol Hill throwing accusations back and forth against Trump or in defense of Trump, we got a problem. Because how do things really, really get done? You know, I'm sitting here today and I'm watching reports. And it's talking about how 130,000 jobs were filled in January and how that number was a bit larger than anticipated. That would appear to be a good thing for the administration. It would appear to be a good thing to see the three indexes, whether it's the S&P, it's the NASDAQ, it's the Dow Jones, elevating. It would appear to be a good thing to see the unemployment rate at 4.3% as opposed to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%. It would appear to be a good thing. But we don't even know what to deduce from that. I've got a governor coming on at the top of the hour, and I don't know what the hell he's going to say about this. If it falls in line with the rest of the Democrats, what we're going to hear is, you know what? What they got to do with the price of gas? What they got to do with the price of groceries? What they got to do with people paying their rent, their mortgages, etc. That's what we're going to hear. Damn, we're at a place right now in our society, we don't even know what to define as success. We don't even know what to define as positive. Because the two sides are so polarized that nobody knows whether to consider something to be a good thing or a bad thing. We got a federal deficit. We got a U.S. deficit. We're wondering how much of GDP that's chewing up. We can't seem to make up our minds whether the tariffs are good or bad. We've got folks on the right talking about it's important that we deport people and send them on their way, men, women, and children. Because we got too many migrants in this country illegally. On one hand, that sounds about right. Because we had a Democrat as president in Joe Biden that let millions upon millions of migrants into the country via open borders And they didn't think a damn thing, nor have a plan about how to address that issue. We had a candidate in Kamala Harris that appeared to be far more interested in making sure she didn't engage in what would be deemed as betrayal for anything that she spoke against than President Biden, as opposed to committing herself to winning the damn race. She wanted to make sure she didn't lose a supporter or a friend that was the president at that particular moment in time. Where'd I get the American people? We got Trump out here just days ago letting out a video. You didn't think I would forget that, did you? A video about a 2020 election being rigged yet again. The man is back in office, ladies and gentlemen. He's the commander in chief. He has more power and influence than he ever had in his first term than he would have had if he had a consecutive second term. He's back in office and can't let go with his petty ass self. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And why I say petty ass? And why do I go off like that? Because it's exactly the reason why I didn't vote for him. I'm not getting into policy. I'm not telling you, you know, his policies, because guess what? When we consider our national debt, when we consider the fact that our deficit has escalated above $38.3 trillion, nobody's doing good with that kind of a deficit. Where's the money management? Where's the strategy? Where's the planning? What the hell is going on? And it's at the expense of the American people that have been used as pawns and nothing short of suckers at the expense of both of these parties. I have nothing against any specific individuals, but as a body, as parties, I can't stand none of their asses. They make me sick because of this. We got a situation where you're going to put out a video of the former president and first ladies and images of them being apes was put on a video. He did not make the video. He simply posted it on his Truth Social channel. And then he pointed the finger at an unnamed staffer and blame them for it. So let me get this straight. The unnamed staffer had access with the ability to post on Truth Social, Trump's personal Truth Social platform at 11:44 at night. Trump had no knowledge of this, but it was up for 12 hours. Trump can't stay off his Truth Social post account for 12 minutes. But we supposed to believe that you didn't know anything about it for 12 hours. You got Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary. First thing she jumped on was it being fake news and fake outrage, as if she was black and she could understand and she had a right to speak to the level of outrage black people were feeling. But still, to backtrack off all of that, and let me make sure I read her statement, which is posted right there. She said, this is from an internet meme video depicting President Trump as the king of the jungle and the Democrats as characters from The Lion King. Please stop the fake outrage and report on something today that actually matters to the American public. So you're supposed to define for us what matters? Let me be fair to Caroline Leavitt, because if you are a Republican, you cannot hate on the job that she is doing. You can if you're a Democrat, not if you're a Republican, not if you're a member of the GOP. Let's just keep it a buck. But here's the deal. Black folks, Hispanic folks, respectfully, the Jewish community, would you be saying that if they were abhorred by something that resembled anti-Semitism? Would you sit up there and tell them, can we focus on something more important? Why is such verbiage reserved for black people? I can assure you, Caroline Leavitt, black folks care about the economy. We care about safety in the streets. We care about the borders. I will never go against Donald Trump for closing the borders. My position has been very clear from day one. Biden opened it. That's why it had to be closed. If he had followed the Obama plan, the man that served under Barack Obama as his vice president, when he became president, had he followed Obama's plan, who deported 3.1 million people, none of this would be necessary. But in the same breath, let me be very, very clear. There is no condoning the way in which ICE has gone about its clearly at the behest of the Trump administration. You got to look at Stephen Miller differently. You got to look at J.D. Vance differently. You got to look at Trump. As bad as people look at him already, the excessive nature in which ICE has conducted itself is so reprehensible, it looks un-American. Now, some would sit up there and say, they're just following orders, while others would say, there's certain orders you don't have to follow. We saw Senator Mark Kelly get himself in trouble recently when he joined a slew of his contemporaries on the Democratic side doing a video compelling officers, military people, to not follow illegal orders, thereby implying that they would receive illegal orders, which is why the Trump administration, led by Department of War boss Pete Hegseth, Mr. Fox News on the weekends, before he got this job, to go after Senator Mark Kelly. And of course, just ruled, grand jury, that ain't happening. So now you're back to square one. But the point is, I still stand by what I said about Mark Kelly, Senator Mark Kelly back then, when I said, had no business being a part of that video. You're a senator who served in the military. Civilian rules don't apply to you. Military rules, though, do. That was a very dangerous thing for you to do. It was unwise. Leave it to somebody else to do that for you. And I still stand by that. But I digress. My point is, in the end, it all leads to chaos. And in the end, chaos is what Trump wants. Because you see, when you focus on the 2020 election, can't get over the fact that you lost. Want to swear up and down using stooges who work for you to validate your proclamations that indeed it was rigged. How does that benefit the American people, particularly when you're in office now? I'll tell you how it benefits Trump. It gives him the license to continue to point to his belief that elections are rigged, thereby bringing our whole democratic system into question, creating chaos. So in the event that the GOP loses the midterms, he can say it's inauthentic. It's not real. It's illegitimate. How is that going to benefit the American people? When folks are fighting in the streets, where the hell he going to be at? When folks are thinking that their hard-earned money and their efforts and their commitment to the American way of life is being compromised by crooks who are stealing elections and stuff like that. If that's the belief that you embed into the brains of tens of millions of American citizens when they fighting in the streets over it, where Trump gonna be at? How is that question relevant? I'll tell you how it's relevant. Ain't that what happened on January 6th, 2021, the insurrection? Ain't that what happened? Remember that he was outside? And he said, we've got to take our country back? Remember when he sat up there and he said, hey, you can't let this stand. You can't let this happen. We got to march down there and we got to fight. And then he said, we're going to go down there. I'm going to be with you. And then got into the beast and drove back to the White House while they stormed the U.S. Capitol. Now, to be clear, understand what kind of dude you're listening to right now. I'm one of the dudes that no matter how insightful, how instigating, how provocative his verbiage was that day, you're grown-ass women and men. You're not children. You have minds of your own. You have the power of will and the ability to exercise whatever you choose to as an adult. I am not one who believes that Trump is solely and totally responsible for the insurrection that took place on the Capitol. But make no mistake, it was an insurrection. And make no mistake, he certainly instigated it. No doubt about it. I just don't sit up there and give a pass to grown-ass men and women who made grown-up decisions on their own. And those who were incarcerated deserve to be incarcerated. Over 1,500 of them granted pardons. Utterly ridiculous. That's the kind of stuff that we're talking about here. And I'm telling you something right now. You're damn right he's culpable to some degree. No question. Again, I'm just not absolving them. My point in bringing all of that up is to say lives, as they have been continuously altered and affected because of the nonsense and the chaos that has existed since this man has returned to office, not assuaging the concerns of the American people one bit. It was also going on back then. Many people suffered. And one of them happens to be my next guest. He was an officer on Capitol Hill that day. And he was subjected to something none of us should have ever been subjected to. Not in America. But it happened anyway. Now he's back, he's thriving, and he's determined to contribute to making a difference by being a candidate for the 5th Congressional District in Maryland. His name is Harry Dunn, and he'll be on this show, Straight Shooter, with yours truly, Stephen A., in just a minute. Don't go away. Harry Dunn in the house for the very first time. Can't wait to talk to him. 866-967-6887, 866-96-POTUS. That is the number to call. But after Harry Dunn and I finish talking, don't go away. He's in the house, and I'm not going anywhere. Back with more in a minute. Paramount Plus celebrates Black History Month with the Black Voices Collection. You can stream stories of excellence like the series Watson, starring Morris Chestnut as a modern-day Dr. John Watson. He applies a specific type of deductive reasoning that he learned from his years working with the infamous detective Sherlock Holmes. And if you're feeling in the mood for stories of family and love, check out the David Oyelowo, led lawman Bass Reeves. You can also find David and Selma in Becoming King, both in the collection. And don't miss out on stories of community in Cedric the Entertainer's The Neighborhood and drama-filled The Chi. Explore series, movies, and more in the Black Voices Collection on Paramount Plus. Stream now.
I witnessed the rioters using all kinds of weapons against officers, including flagpoles, metal bike racks that they had torn apart, and various kinds of projectiles. Officers were being bloodied in the fighting. Many were screaming, and many were blinded and coughing from chemical irritants being sprayed in their faces. I gave decontamination aid to as many officers as I could, flushing their eyes with water to dilute the chemical irritants. Soon thereafter, I heard, "Attention all units, the Capitol has been breached."
That is the voice of Officer Harry Dunn testifying before the House Select Committee months after he defended the U.S. Capitol from insurrectionists on January 6, 2021. He's now a candidate for Congress running to represent Maryland's 5th Congressional District. Please welcome to Straight Shooter with yours truly, the one and only Harry Dunn. How are you, my man? How's everything going?
Hey, Stephen A., thanks for having me on, my friend. Thank you.
The pleasure is all mine. Let's get right to it, because before we start, I just want to first thank you for your service to this country. I really appreciate it. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and all the listeners out there listening to the show, and I'm quite sure tens of millions, yeah, if not more, of American citizens in this country. Thank you so much for your service. I really appreciate that, my brother.
I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm one of the familiar faces and names that people recognize from that day. But make no mistake, there were hundreds of other officers that gave so much and that deserve this recognition too. So with that, I acknowledge my coworkers too. So thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you know, you've said that January 6th was the worst day of your life. Yeah. Could you take us back to that day, obviously when a violent mob stormed the building in an effort to stop Congress from certifying Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election. I'm not accusing every single soul there of being violent or anything, but we all get the picture. We saw what was going on in television. Take us back to that day. Bring it back to us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was a police officer at that time, I think, for more than 12, 13 years serving at the United States Capitol. And one of the things there, we would always deal with protest at the Capitol, no matter what it was. It could be somebody expressing their Second Amendment rights, somebody that was pro-abortion, anti-abortion. It didn't matter what the issue was. People came up to the Capitol to express their grievances with their members of Congress, no matter what it is, because one, that's their right. They're allowed to do so. So we would always deal with civil disobedience, the key word being civil. So, you know, when we were there on January 6th, a lot of us, you know, we heard chatter of things that were happening, that they were going to breach the Capitol, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, all right, whatever. It sounds good. It's not going to happen. We weren't prepared by our frontline officials to what we were expecting, what we ended up facing that day. So the main thing to take away that day is a lot of people credited police officers with saving democracy or whatever. In actuality, we were just looking out for each other and making sure everybody went home safely to their families. That includes members of Congress, Republicans, Democrats, and most of all, our coworkers. And at the end of the day, as ugly as that day was, as ugly as it was, the Capitol Police's mission is to protect members of Congress so they can fulfill their constitutional duties. And that's what happened that day, as ugly as it was. So that was a proud moment that no member of Congress was hurt, no staff was hurt, and Congress went back and certified that election later that night.
Forgive this question, but I have to ask. It's one thing for us on the outside. It's one thing for pundits on television to say stuff like they were violent insurrectionists. Sure. One side says no, only a few. The other side says no, a lot of them were. You saw it on TV. But you were an officer on the scene. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I was fortunate. I didn't receive the beatings, the bloodiness that a lot of my coworkers did. I was fortunate. However, I was able to provide aid to so many of them that were beaten, that were bloody, bruised, suffered dislocated limbs. It was as violent as it looked and then some. And Stephen A., to talk about your point, what you just said, the pundits talking about it, nobody has to tell you what you saw. You don't need a pundit. With all due respect to the pundits out there that gave, if you will, play-by-play analysis of January 6th, you can literally watch it on mute. You can watch it on mute. Just press play. And you look at that and let anybody, one decent human being, say that what they're watching was not violent and it was American. Nobody in their right mind would say that. And there are people that are saying that it was just a tourist visit. And those people are out of their damn minds.
You know, when we watch and we've seen what we saw, you know, I watched it from start to finish. It was the most uncomfortable thing that I'd seen on television in the modern era, to be quite honest with you. One of them, without question, because the amount of people that were clearly storming the Capitol and what have you. You heard reports that the police were letting some of these folks in. Yeah. They didn't storm. They were being let in by officers on Capitol Hill. Any truth to that whatsoever?
Not being able to stop somebody and letting somebody in are two different, completely different things. The officers were not able to stop hundreds of people pushing past them. Nobody. We weren't thousands of people that we weren't letting them in. Like that, it's absurd. Like you could find a clip that you could paint in whatever type of picture of the narrative they're trying to display, but not being able to stop somebody is completely different from letting them in. So no, there was no truth to that.
As officers on Capitol Hill, were you in a position, I imagine that you were not, but I gotta ask, were you in a position where you heard the president's speech prior to them storming the Capitol?
No.
Like listening to him and hearing what he said?
No, not at that moment. Obviously, as it went on, we were able to hear what was going on, and you know, like the tweets came out and these the video clips of him go down to the Capitol. And by the way, while the people were attacking law enforcement and beating my coworkers and me, they told us Donald Trump sent us here. So I appreciate you in your last segment when you talked about the grown men and women that made the decisions to go there. They absolutely did. However, Stephen A., if you have arguably the most powerful man in the world, telling you to do something, that kind of gives you a little bit of emboldenedness. Like, you're emboldened to do it. Like, just kind of like if your mother tells you to do something, everything stops and you do what mama says. Now, if the president of the, you know, the most powerful nation in the world, the most powerful person in that nation, tells you to do it, you're emboldened by it. So they felt they were right being there. So that's why Donald Trump pardoned them, over 1,500 of them.
Do you believe that the president should have been prosecuted for that, what happened on January 6th?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll admit, I am biased. I dislike the president. I think he's a criminal, and I think he's responsible for January 6th. You know, they didn't even get the opportunity for Jack Smith to present his case, to let it be heard. And he said, with the evidence that they uncovered, it was beyond a reasonable doubt. He guaranteed, almost guaranteed, that he would have won that case had it made it to trial. And that's one of the biggest parts of my disappointment, is the lack of accountability that has been had since that day. And you know, when I first started in January 7th, 2021, when I first started speaking out, it was about accountability, because accountability does two things. One, it serves as a deterrent to keep people from doing things again. And secondly, it brings some type of closure to all those victims and people aggrieved. And we, as American people, and I've selfishly, as a police officer, as a Capitol Police officer that day, have not received any accountability from that day. And the little bit of accountability that we did have, it was ripped away from us when Donald Trump pardoned every single one that was convicted of their crimes on January 6th.
Harry, did you feel this way about Donald Trump before the insurrection that stormed the Capitol, or do these feelings that you have about him, is it a result of what transpired that day?
I didn't like him. I can be honest. I don't hide my bias, if you will. I wasn't a fan of him. I thought he was a divisive individual, and he only cared about himself. he proved me right, I guess. I don't want to be proven right, but I did not like him. But that only made my disdain for him and his supporters grow even stronger. Because as we're seeing, even with this administration now, it's all about him. It's all about me, me, me. I mean, you got a guy that's actively pursuing the name change of Penn Station and Dulles Airport, and just changed his name.
The Kennedy Center.
So it's all about him, and he only cares about him. Like, when he told people he was going down to the Capitol with them, they did it on his behalf. He didn't go with them. He didn't go.
The officers that served with you, I imagine that most of them feel the way that you do about what transpired on January 6th. Did you encounter any colleagues or contemporaries that felt differently?
Unfortunately, Stephen A., you know, law enforcement, the community as a whole, are Republicans. The Fraternal Order of Police, the FOP, the largest police union in the country, endorsed Donald Trump for his last three elections, including after January 6th. Now, they put out a nice little statement saying that they're against the pardons, but I mean, we had the FOP lawyers, Stephen. There were officers who were charged for January 6th come from other states. And it was a gentleman from Illinois who came from Illinois and was arrested and charged for his conduct on January 6th. He was a participant, not an officer. The FOP lawyers represented him in his trial. So I have a very bad taste in my mouth about the way that the FOP responded. I was a member of the Fraternal Order of Police. I'm really disappointed in the way that their response of handling January 6th in the aftermath of it. I don't know how that alone and the incitement of that day by Donald Trump did not lead to a disqualification. Listen, I understand them maybe not wanting to endorse the Democrat. I can understand that. Sure, they have their views, but to just stay out of it then. You threw your support behind somebody who encouraged the attacking of law enforcement, who pardoned the people who attacked law enforcement. And that isn't okay. And that's always going to leave a bad taste in my mouth.
What kind of punishment do you think suffices for the insurrectionists on that day? Because you brought up on them being pardoned on several occasions, which you have every right to do, more so than most people, I might add. But I'm asking, what would have whetted your appetite to some degree, for lack of a better phrase, as it pertains to the level of punishment that they were able to receive? What would have satisfied you?
So I can acknowledge that I wouldn't be in a place to make a reasonable, unbiased decision. I would respectfully sit that one out because I would just say, hey, put him in jail, throw away the key. But I do understand that everybody there that day did not attack law enforcement. There were people who there were trespassing, who did make our jobs harder by being there, by the way. The Capitol grounds were closed. So anybody on Capitol grounds was already guilty of trespassing alone. So they made our jobs harder. So, there's levels to it, but I look at, in that day, I'm extremely biased about everybody that was there that day. And it's hard for me to be reasonable when it comes to levying out punishments. So that's why I'm glad that I am not the person who had to make that decision.
Harry Dunn, a candidate for the U.S. Congress, looking to represent Maryland's 5th Congressional District. He's right here with Stephen A., straight shooter with yours truly. You've called this whole campaign a continuation of that service that you provided as a police officer, a U.S. Capitol police officer. Explain that, please.
You know, I have been my entire adult life just a public servant. You know, I am equipped with my morals and my values, but a member of Congress, I believe, is supposed to be out there doing what the people want to do. You don't go with your agenda. Your job is to go there and be the voice of your constituents, your community, the people who put you in office. And so many times we have, I see a lot of elected officials doing what is best, what they want. I've been out there. I've been on speaking ever since January 6th, all across the country, different states, red states, Kansas, Nevada, Oklahoma. I did a town hall in the Villages down in Florida. So I've gone and seen, and people want people that are going to stand up and fight. This isn't a time for politics as usual right now, because there's nothing as usual about what this moment that we're living in right now. To be very candid, I wish I did not have to run. I wish I could donate my $50 to my favorite candidate.
Why do you feel you have to run? Why do you feel you have to run?
Because I don't think we can just sit back and wait and hope that it works out. You know, hope was great when President Obama was running. It was great to have a hope. We're hopeful for the future, but we are seeing, I believe, the demise of this country, the demise of unity, the demise of the democracy as we see it, to a wannabe dictator. And Donald, he said that himself. He said he wanted to be a dictator. So that, you know, that's not just, you know, me just rambling. He said that. I think we're seeing the demise of it, and we don't have the opportunity or the luxury, if you will, to sit back and just hope somebody else does it. And well, I've been fighting for accountability since day one. And I will continue to take that fight right now to Congress if I'm elected.
Is there a particular congressional figure or Senate figure that you would like to emulate, somebody on Capitol Hill that you like the way they go about the business of being an elected official in this country at this particular moment in time? Is there somebody that stands out in your mind?
I have a lot of people that I have a lot of respect for, Stephen A., but respectfully, I think I'm just going to try to carve out my own lane. I think that's the problem. We try to emulate other people instead of being authentically ourselves. And you know, I try to be a common sense person. I acknowledge when I'm biased about stuff. I try to stick to the facts. While I said I have a strong moral conviction, I believe in my faiths, my beliefs that my family instilled in me. My father was a military member, and I just grew up in a strong community. I have 4 sisters, so I believe in protecting people. I believe in protecting women and standing up for them, Black women, and all that's like that. This is my community. I believe in that. So, no, I don't have anybody in particular that I would want to emulate. I'm just going to be authentically me, Harry Dunn.
This isn't your first run. In 2024, you ran for Maryland's 3rd Congressional District, coming in second to now Representative Sarah Elfreth, if I remember correctly. You're now running in a district where you grew up to replace Representative Steny Hoyer, who's retiring. If there is a reason why voters should cast their ballots for you, what would you say?
You know, I'm glad that you brought up that I lost 2 years ago. And you know, a lot of things that I campaigned about, they were threats of things that could happen. We talked about the things that are happening now, the Project 2025, if you will. All of that stuff is happening. It's happening as we speak. So people are surprised. And I always say, how are people surprised when Donald Trump told us he was going to do this? So that, you know, but to the point about me losing, You know, if a loss deters you from continuing to fight and stand up and seek opportunities to make a change, then I think you need to internally reevaluate your reason for running. My reason isn't some because I have some type of agenda for my political aspirations. I have aspirations for this country. I want to get it back to a place where we can have adults sitting down and having those conversations at the table. And we're not doing that. We're not doing that right now. During the government shutdowns, if you look, with the Democrats were fighting for the Affordable Health Care Act, the premium, the subsidies, the top 10 states affected the most by those expiration of those cuts were Republican states. The top 10 were Republican states, and all Republicans were against it. Well, not all. Some of them came around eventually on the House version of it. But we need people that are going to continue to fight and be out there pounding the pavement for their constituents, for the people of this country. Right. And this isn't like to finally answer your question. This isn't a time for career politicians right now. We need career public servants and people who have a track record of showing up, especially when things are hard. And unfortunately, unfortunately, the world knows me because of that, because of the worst day of my life.
Last question falls along the line of law enforcement, at least in the eyes of some, not all in this particular moment in time. But you've called for the abolishment of ICE.
Yeah.
I want to know, you know, as an officer, you know, what specific federal agency or framework would you propose in the place of ICE to manage immigration enforcement? Because clearly that is still, regardless of what we may think about Trump and his behavior, how he acts, how he leads, et cetera, there is no doubt that there was an immigration crisis because Biden opened the borders. And Trump has not helped that matter because he's created chaos in the streets of America yet again. What do you propose would be a remedy to all of that if you indeed were successful in abolishing ICE, which I believe is pretty improbable, by the way. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But I, as a law enforcement officer, I fully support law enforcement, full stop. Like, we need to support our law enforcement, but we also need to put them in the position that they can be the most successful. And I don't believe that we're doing that right now. Why I say I think we need to abolish ICE is because in the way that it exists right now, if you look at the shootings and the murders, if you will, of Renee Good and Alex Pretty in Minnesota, those weren't junior officers. They weren't the 47-day trainees. They were 10-year officers and 9-year officers, respectfully. So this wasn't about training. So I don't believe you can train your way out of an ideology that exists in ICE right now. Donald Trump told law enforcement back in August when he deployed the National Guard in Washington, D.C., and this is a quote from the president, "Law enforcement, do whatever the hell you want to do." That is unacceptable. That is unacceptable, and that is irresponsible, and that is what the cause is. These law enforcement officers. Now, listen, there are so many law enforcement officers that go out there that serve their country, that serve their community. They do it with honor. But the saying "one bad apple can spoil the bunch" is 100% true. And the fact that there's no accountability makes the trust erode even more in law enforcement, and I think overall makes their job harder to do because people have lost trust in the community, in law enforcement. They see them as terrorizers and not public servants and protectors of the community. So I think I'm all for getting the worst of the worst out, the murderers, the rapists. Let's get them out of here. Get them the hell out. They don't belong here. But immigrants just want to come here, and most of them want to provide for their families, create a better life, create a better living. And I think that we get rid of the need for ICE by actually having an immigration policy that actually works. So many presidents down the line have talked about, let's make common sense immigration reform. It doesn't happen. It shouldn't take 10, 15, 20 years for people's visa applications to be heard. So I think we start there. And then we need to find a new way for enforcement. Yeah.
My only pushback to you with that, I'm going to let you go, but my only pushback with that is that President Obama in office, class personified in every step, in every way, still deported 3.1 million migrants from this country.
Sure.
All of them weren't criminals or anything. If you came across the border illegally, you know what? He said, you got to go back. 3.1 million of them. Hillary Clinton spoke against that. Hillary Clinton spoke in favor of deporting individuals. Bill Clinton spoke in favor of deporting individuals. Joe Biden spoke, you know, when he was a senator, and then the vice president spoke against it as well. So we understand there's a problem as a country that we got to find a way to deal with. But listen to Harry Dunn, candidate for Congress, running to represent Maryland's 5th Congressional District. Appreciate your time. Thank you for being on the show. All the best to you, man. And I hope you win. It would be nice to see you in Congress. All the best to you, my man.
Thank you, man. Have a great day, brother. Thanks for having me on.
Always. One and only Harry Dunn right here with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. 866-967-6887 is the number to call. It's 866-96-POTUS. We're going to get to your phone calls to end the bottom of the hour, no doubt about that, before Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear comes on the show. Lots to talk about. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of opinions, no doubt. You have them as well. We'll come to you next. Don't go away. Straight Shooter with your boy. See you in a minute. 54 minutes past hour number one. Back in the Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Coming at you every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Breaking news. House of Representatives votes to disapprove of Trump's Canada tariffs. The House on Wednesday voted to block President Donald Trump's tariffs on Canada, with 6 Republicans joining the Democrats in the symbolic rebuke. That's what you need to know. He can't impose his tariffs on Canada. If they were successful in retrieving the power that he had to impose those tariffs on Canada, what else are they going to pull up? What else are they going to do to stymie Trump's influence? This is why the midterms are so important. This is why he keeps focusing on rigged elections. Pay attention. Pay attention. Shlomo in Montana, you're live with Stephen A. What's up?
Stephen A., thank you so much. Been following your career for a while. So you're awesome. I'm originally from outside of Philly, too. So, yeah.
Yes, sir. Anyhow. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, and as far as immigration goes, just a couple things. When you were talking to hopefully Representative Dunn, but when you were talking to him, you were talking about administration's not really doing anything, and in that you mentioned Biden's open border policy. So two questions on that. Number one, we got to look back on January 2024 when comprehensive immigration passed the Senate.
And Trump influenced them not to put it through because he wanted to use it as a campaign tool. I remember.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you remember that. And so, I mean, administrations have tried to do things in the past. And, I mean, Trump's – that was flat out election interference
Shlomo, let me tell you this real quick. The reason I say that, because I'm not pointing the finger at anybody from recent memory. The fact is this has been going on for a long time, decades. Immigration has been an issue. Clinton's talked about it. H.W. talked about it before him. George W. talked about it after him. Obama talked about it, campaigned on it. Hillary Rodham Clinton did the same when she was campaigning against Obama. She did it again when she was campaigning against Trump. In 2016, Obama and Mitt Romney spoke about it, even though that was nothing compared to how much they talked about Russia. And we've been talking about it ever since. We've been talking about it over 30 years.
No, and also Reagan granted amnesty. You know, he's part of the reason there is such a crisis.
Yeah,
think that the border's open, literally
good
open,
point.
When Reagan did it. Yeah, but and then when you mentioned that Biden did have an open border policy, was that mostly because, I mean, and I know that's something that you might believe, but is it something because of the COVID stay in Mexico while you were, applying for asylum thing? And then
it was through his entire administration. Certainly that upped the ante, no doubt, and I understand that. But the point is that we had a whole bunch of stuff going on in this country. The last thing you needed to do was let more people in. You wouldn't let us out of our homes. We couldn't go to work. We had to wear masks everywhere. We couldn't travel. So why would you have borders open at that particular moment in time? To some degree, he course correct and tried to reel it back in, but the damage was already done. And that's just a fact. So I can't go with that, but I get what you're coming from. So many people to blame. No doubt about it. Nobody can be absolved. Hour number two up next. The governor from the great state of Kentucky, a Democrat, the one and only Andy Beshear. He's up next on Straight Shooter with yours truly. Hour number two up next. You don't want to miss this. Do not go away. Hour number two, Straight Shooter in the house. Welcome to hour number two, a Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Coming at you as I love to do every Wednesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio. And I'm very, very excited. I've been waiting a long time to speak to our next guest. He has served as the governor of the great state of Kentucky since 2019. He is the chair of the Democratic Governors Association and also hosts his own podcast right here on SiriusXM. Please welcome, for the first time, to Straight Shooter with yours truly, the one and only Governor Andy Beshear. How are you, Governor? How's everything going?
I'm doing all right. Really appreciate you having me come on, especially in times like this.
Absolutely. No question about it. And I thank you for coming on, taking time out of your busy schedule. You know, we've seen the chaos that has unfolded in Minneapolis with ICE enforcement and what have you. You appeared on ABC's The View on Monday and called for the complete withdrawal of ICE agents from American cities and for Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem to be fired. First of all, I want to know, how realistic is that request in terms of it reaching fruition? And also, how much attention have you been paying to the testimony that Mr. Lyons, the head of ICE, has been giving on Capitol Hill in the last couple of days?
Well, it's necessary. This is an unmitigated disaster. You know, when I was attorney general, I was the lead law enforcement agent in Kentucky. And the way that ICE is acting, no other state, local, or national law enforcement group is even close to what we're seeing. They are overly aggressive. They are violating people's rights. They believe they can barge into an American citizen's home with just an administrative warrant without going to the courts. And Stephen A., they have a body count of dead Americans for this deportation plan. They have not been trained appropriately. We need this thing fixed. And so I'm making the full call. We cannot let this continue. And look at their leadership. They're egging them on. When an American is standing up to them, is talking about their rights, they are immediately designated as a domestic terrorist. We deserve better. And I remember the first time I ever went abroad. I think I was 18. And I remember getting off the airplane and seeing two military officials armed in an airport. And I thought, wow, That's not the United States of America. Well, guess what? Right now, we've got all these armed folks in body armor, in masks, out on our streets. It's just not right.
I'm wondering what level of culpability, if any at all, do you feel the Democratic Party should have? I remember seeing on video of CNN back in the days when Obama was running the country and he deported 3.1 million people plus, and ICE was being celebrated. I saw a feature being done on CNN, for crying out loud, when they traveled with ICE agents and people were speaking glowingly about ICE. What's the difference between what we were seeing then and now specifically, but most importantly, why? Because ICE agents would tell you they're doing their job, they're doing what they've been instructed and mandated to do, because that kind of body count that you just alluded to is almost a mandate. You've got the Trump administration looking for a certain number of people to deport every single month that they've got to answer to. What about that and how that plays a role or how that could play a role in your thinking?
Well, you're right. The Obama administration did deport a lot of people who were here illegally. And what did you not see? Armed ICE agents in the streets, people in masks, American citizens killed, people's rights being violated. In other words, there is a professional way to enforce our laws, but to do so with humanity. If Democrats have blame, we needed earlier to be very clear that border security is national security. We do need strong, controlled borders. But what we don't need are agents in the streets of Minnesota, people striking fear into the hearts of our citizens. What we're seeing right now is unnecessary. It is unprofessional, and it's just anti-American.
I'm asking the question that I asked because, I understand that ICE is they're the visual culprits in all of this. But the person behind all of this is the president of the United States and his administration that have had these mandates. They've made it clear, campaigned on how you got to get folks out of here, whether the number is 12 million, 14 million, 16 million, 20 million, because President Joe Biden left the borders open and so many people came in, the belief is you got to get them out. It's not really our problem. They created the problem with the Biden administration. We're just trying to fix it because we've got to save our country. To those on the right that make that proclamation, what do you say?
What I'd say is, listen, if we have a violent criminal that is in this country illegally, send it to us. We'll go get them. We don't want anyone dangerous that has hurt any of our people to be out there. And we're willing to work with any organization to bring them to justice. But the way that ICE is going about this mandate to hit certain numbers puts people at risk. In other words, any other law enforcement group wouldn't roll up at a Home Depot to apprehend someone because that could send people running. It could put the rest of the public at risk. They would do their homework ahead of time. They would make sure how they go about what they're doing is safe. None of that is happening here. It is haphazard, and you see the results, the violence, everything that you see in Minnesota playing out.
Any level of culpability that should be attached to Democrats when you take into account sanctuary cities, whether it's Los Angeles, whether it's Chicago, whether it's Portland, you know, places like that, Minneapolis or what have you. Sanctuary cities essentially gives law enforcement officials the right to essentially ignore federal mandates that are handed down if obviously you don't agree with their policies, which clearly some states don't when it comes to the president and his agenda when it comes to migrants in this country. What about those that blame sanctuary cities at being at the core of this problem and something and making moves to sort of eradicate sanctuary cities? What do you say to that?
Well, I think that could have been an argument months ago or at the beginning of this administration, but it has moved so far beyond that. This is an administration that is revoking asylum, that is showing up to immigration hearings of people going through the process, arresting these individuals, and then trying to deport them. What we see now are families that are grabbed on the streets, thrown into the back of a Humvee, taken to another state, only at that point for them to say, okay, you're here legally. We're going to release you in this other state. Good luck getting home. Yes, border security is important, and Democrats should have been stronger on it. Yes, we do have to enforce our laws that are on the books. People who are here unlawfully have violated the law. But how we go about all this shows our humanity. We don't shackle people's ankles. We don't take videos of them to push out there to look tough. We don't put people in pens that we wouldn't put animals that we find in our cities. Now, what we see from this administration is an entire lack of humanity. And from folks that, like me, claim that they are also Christian in many of these instances. Yes, these people may be here unlawfully, but they are still children of God. And we still have to treat them decently as we enforce these laws.
Governor Andy Beshear right here from Kentucky, right here with Stephen A. on Straight Shooter with yours truly. Let me move on to a different subject that's near and dear to you as well, because according to ABC News, the president invited only Republican governors to the upcoming National Governors Association meeting, of which you obviously are the chair. He did invite Democrats to a separate dinner at the White House. First of all, tell me your thoughts about how he appears to be treating Democratic governors. And secondly, do you plan on attending any dinner where he's offering to have it with Democratic governors?
Well, I do have some breaking news for you.
Okay.
It is possible to pressure the president and he changed his mind. So initially he didn't invite any Democratic governor to the business meeting. And this is something that happens every single year. I went to it under President Trump in my first year, under President Biden in the middle years. I went to it last year with President Trump. This is something that every president and all the governors do every single year. It's that idea that there should be at least some things that we can work on, that we can have access to cabinet secretaries. Last year, I was able to talk about a natural disaster we'd had, how the funding hadn't been released, and we actually made some progress on it while I was there. But the idea that he was going to break that precedent, he was not going to invite any of us to the actual business part. But okay, you can come socialize later, didn't sit right with me. And then we learned that he had not invited Wes Moore and Jared Polis to the dinner. Now, those are two friends of mine, and you don't get to pick and choose like that. If you're not inviting Wes, you're not inviting Jared, then none of the Democratic governors are going to go. So I think where we are right now is back invited to the business meeting. Now, my question before either saying yes or no is it going to be substantive? Are we going to get the opportunity to actually do business and do some work? Or is this going to be a rant like the prayer breakfast? Is this going to be a rant like he did in Davos, where I was sitting 30 feet away? Is he just going to yell at the governors he doesn't like while we're there? Because if that's the case, it's not worth it. So more to come.
Well, let me ask you this. Why do you believe that he highlighted or, you know, targeted the governor of Maryland and the governor of Colorado in terms of not inviting them? What was that about? What's your belief in that regard?
So the interesting thing about that is it actually hit the National Governors Association even harder when he did that, because Jared Polis was the last Democratic head of the National Governors Association, and Wes Moore is the next Democratic head of the National Governors Association. Wow. I know Wes has his views. Not inviting the only Black governor in the United States certainly didn't sit well with him. He's a friend of mine. Doesn't sit well with me either.
We're talking to Governor Andy Beshear from Kentucky right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter with yours truly. You know, I'm looking at it from this perspective right now. When we talk about the president and his behavior, it's relatively dismissed for the most part by a lot of people on the right. Some would argue that it's really highlighted for folks on the left, because now, based on some of the things that we're seeing that's transpired in Texas along with various other places, it's a situation right now in Louisiana as well. Democrats are gaining momentum. Are you of that mindset that the Democratic Party is gaining momentum right now? And if so, what do you think is the biggest reason for that momentum being gained?
Oh, Democrats are gaining significant momentum, and that's seen in win after win after win. Now, last year, the Democratic Governors Association went 2-for-2. We not only won, we won really big in New Jersey and Virginia, and structurally, those should have been close races for a number of reasons, yet they were both double-digit wins. Then you saw the special election in Texas, a significant win in a Trump-plus double-digit place, and we're seeing that across the country. And while a lot of people talk about Trump's actions, I think it's his inaction that is one of the reasons. Right now, it's tough on an American family. It's tough to pay the bills at the end of the month. It's tough for that young couple to afford their new home. A lot of families, a lot of parents aren't able to take their kids on the same vacation that they were able to go on when they were young. And that's got to feel difficult. That's got to feel almost like failure. It feels like that American dream just isn't possible. But if you work hard and play by the rules, you're not getting ahead. And Donald Trump is making it worse. His tariff policy is making the cost of everything skyrocket. It's impacting the economy. His big, ugly bill is going to decimate rural health care. Think about it. When you close a rural hospital, it's the largest payroll in that community. So it's not just the hospital that's going to close. It's the restaurant, the coffee shop, the bank, maybe the insurance agency. What he is doing policy-wise, and I'll give him credit, he is owning it. He named that bill the Big Beautiful Bill. He held up that big tariff board. But it is hitting Americans hard. I'll give you one example. Soybean farmers. Soybean farmers have voted Republican my entire life, maybe for the history of soybean farming. And in Kentucky, people grow corn and then they grow soybeans, and they do it in a cycle. So it replenishes the soil. Well, those markets that Donald Trump tanked because of tariffs may never come back. They sent a lot of their product to USAID, which is no longer around. There was a farm to cafeteria program that was also significantly cut under this administration. Well, they're waking up. They're seeing that this president that they supported has them on the brink of bankruptcy.
Governor, help us out here, you know, because listen, I don't know this stuff the way that you do. You're a governor. I know they keep talking about me running for election. I have no desire to be an elected politician. I can't do it. Y'all can have it, okay? I'm not giving up my money.
I got to ask John Stewart about that yesterday, so maybe we'll get into that.
Yeah, maybe so, maybe what. But I got to tell you this. You know, when you look at the three major indexes, you got the S&P, you got the NASDAQ, okay? You're looking at this kind of stuff and you're hearing and you're seeing, okay, and the Dow Jones, of course, industrial average. They're saying that those numbers are up. You look at the jobs report, 130,000 jobs at the start of the new year. When we say that things are not going well, things are not doing well, people like Trump, surrogates on the right, but also some pundits that pride themselves of being relatively neutral and just calling it as they see it. They say, hey, we're not doing as bad as the Democrats are trying to say that we're doing. How do you respond to that?
I say the pundits may look at the Dow Jones. Our American families are looking at their electric bill. They're looking at their car insurance bill. The number they care about is the one in their bank account, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse. And the struggles of the American people are real. By the way, I think they're the reason that Donald Trump is president. I think he convinced the last group of undecided voters that he would spend more time focused on their everyday needs. And then he convinced them that the vice president, the former vice president, was distracted on a lot of issues. But when you look at his policies and now the way he talks to the American people, he's saying your kids have too many toys. He's saying that if you can't afford a home, you're not working hard enough. That's the exact opposite of what a lot of people voted for. And I think it's a reason that Democrats have a lot of momentum.
What about those that would argue that the Democratic Party didn't pay enough attention to the American people's needs because they were preoccupied with things that don't affect the vast majority of Americans? They didn't focus enough on immigration. They didn't focus enough on the economy. They didn't focus enough on safety in the streets. And instead, they had us talking about transgender and stuff like that. I mean, what about people that make that argument?
Well, listen, I think you're preaching to the choir, and the fact that I believe, at least the way I govern, is I'm always going to stand up for my principles. I'm always going to push back against discrimination, but I spend 80% of my time on things that matter to 100% of the American people. If Democrats want to win, they've got to be talking about jobs and being able to make enough to support your family. We got to be talking about your next doctor's appointment for yourself, your parents, or your kids. We got to focus on the roads and bridges you drive, the school you drop your kids off at, and whether you feel safe in your community. That's how I've been elected three straight times in a state that went to Trump by 31 points during that same period. So when Democrats focus, and also when we get results, you know, these jobs aren't about getting, shouldn't be about just getting reelected the next time. They should be about bettering your state or your country, making things a little better and a little easier for families. So I think when you have that 8100 focus and you get results, people are willing to vote a different way.
Governor Beshear, on the podcast of former FBI Deputy Director Dan Bongino, President Trump called on Republicans to nationalize elections in certain states. Democratic governors in 24 states issued a statement condemning the president's threats. So what's the party doing now to ensure there's not an attempt to steal the midterms? And has there been bipartisan support as it pertains to that?
Remember, when he first started talking about it, he didn't say he wanted to nationalize the elections. He said he wanted Republicans to take over certain elections. In other words, a political party that is not winning in those areas should suddenly run the election. So a guy who whines about losing a race in 2020 that I think it's been fully litigated was fair is now openly talking about rigging the next election because he knows he's going to lose. I mean, that's rich. We're going to stop him. And it won't just be us. You've seen state officials, Republican officials in places like Ohio and elsewhere that say no. You know, under the Constitution, states run these elections, and we will push back as hard as we have to. We're going to make sure that the 2026 elections are fair. And if you look back, some of the same concerns were out there in 2025, even with some of the same statements.
I actually called him out. I was on this show just a day ago, and I was calling him out about all of this noise pertaining to, you know, rigged election. Obviously, the video depicting the former president and the first lady as apes was as disgusting as it gets. I wasn't buying his excuse that it was some unnamed staffer. I thought that was utterly ridiculous. It was a minute long. What do you mean you didn't see the whole video? You watched 10 seconds and approved it to be posted on your Truth Social platform? Nobody's buying that nonsense. We were born at night, not last night. Having said that, I went to a bigger issue, and I said that the original content of the video that was focused primarily on a rigged election of 2020 feeds right into what he wants, because I think he's setting the stage that if Republicans lose in 2026 midterms, again, it was rigged. It couldn't have been legit. It was rigged. That's what this is all about. I mean, is that your thought process as well?
Oh, I mean, he's going to say that. Donald Trump has shown us who he is, whether it's posting that video or whether it's the fact that he cannot accept that he has lost an election. Think about it. He's president again, and he's still talking about that last election. And that video, was awful. So beneath any president of the United States. But again, he shows us who he is. When Tim Scott has to say, if true, this is the most racist thing to come out of this White House, that is a statement on this president. But let me tell you, sadly, people's willingness to call it out has become partisan. People are making excuses for him. There was a Republican county official in Kentucky last October that made an almost identical video. The head of the Republican Party rightfully said, this is wrong, it's racist, and we condemn it. But you know what they said after the president's post? The Democrats were manufacturing outrage.
Mm. I will say this, though. When he put out that video about the Obamas, there were people across both sides of the aisle that condemned it. There was plenty of Republicans that spoke out against him, and they damn sure needed to, make no mistake about that. Let me go to this next question, because I got to ask you about this. You said that too many people put being a Democrat or a Republican ahead of being an American. In your estimation, is that primarily what's wrong with the politics today?
Yeah, I think the divisiveness, the partisanship that isn't just in politics, but is being pushed into people's everyday lives. That idea that if your neighbor thinks differently than you, they're somehow the enemy from within. They're just your neighbor trying to do their very best in a complicated world. I think that Mitch McConnell was one of the architects that's, you know, willing to take any position to have one more R in the Senate than D. And we have got to get beyond that. And I think one of the things that we've got to do to get there is to stop using the word bipartisan in the way that we do. Like, bipartisan suggests there's some deal made that if we're going to do this thing, then somebody else gets something in return. But what matters most to Americans are nonpartisan issues. And creating good jobs is something we should do without creating any deal. Infrastructure investment, making sure our bridges don't fall down, is something that we should do without any deal. We should be able to work together on reasonable public safety, on better funding and getting higher quality public education. The idea that there are things we have to do first, the bolts that help our society, before we start arguing about anything else. We've been able to do that a lot more in Kentucky. And listen, I deal with a supermajority in my chambers on the other side.
Well, listen, a couple of questions before I let you get on out of here. I mean, you seem to be a very, very pragmatic person. This is the first time I'm talking to you. I'm really enjoying the conversation. Are you running for president? I mean, you're the chairman for the Democratic governors right now. I mean, are you going to be a candidate for the 2028 presidential election?
Well, I haven't made any decision yet, and part of that is because I am dedicated to being head of the Democratic Governors Association this year, and if I do my job right, Stephen A., there'll be more people that are being considered, because I think in 2026, the House will flip, Democrats will make a run at the Senate, and that's important. But if you want to change the map for 2028, it's not about flipping the House seat in Des Moines, it's about flipping the governor's office in Iowa. Democrats can't keep running in presidential elections in only five states with zero margin of error. And so I'm dedicated this year to doing my best to changing that map, electing a lot of good Democratic governors, and hopefully starting to heal this country. And I'll say this, whether it's me or somebody else in 2028, it needs to be about more than just winning, though electability has to be top of mind for Democrats. We need somebody who can move this country beyond where we are, that can lower the temperature, that can get us back to being Americans first and Democrats or Republicans second, third, or fourth. Mm-hmm. I think we've been able to do that in Kentucky at least a lot more than other places. So if that's me, that's something I'll consider. But if it's somebody else, I'm willing to back them too.
Very last question is involving your show on Saturdays at 11 a.m. What do people get from you, in your estimation, when they tune in to the Andy Beshear podcast on Saturdays at 11 a.m.?
Well, the goal of the Andy Beshear podcast is to help you to process all this difficult news that's hit you minute after minute after minute. It's the idea that it's causing a lot of people emotional pain, difficulty in getting through the week, that feeling of chaos that's out there in the world. So we have different guests on. Right now we have a season called Prime for 2026, where some of the best Democratic primary candidates come on and give you the pitch and why you should be watching their race. But we also get out there on sports. Rick Pitino is our guest this week. We've had Steve Kerr on, and him talking about leadership is a masterclass. That one I enjoyed. But if people are looking for a podcast where you'll hear about the news, you'll process the news, but at the end, you'll feel a little more prepared. You'll feel a little bit better. You're ready to face the week ahead. That's our goal each and every week.
My thanks. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear right here for the first time on Straight Shooter with George Truly. Really, really appreciate your time out of your busy schedule. Thank you, Governor. You're welcome to come back on anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and I look forward to it.
Absolutely. The one and only Andy Beshear, Governor for the great state of Kentucky. Catch the Andy Beshear podcast Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on SiriusXM Progress Channel 127. Your calls and more to come up next. Don't go away. It's Straight Shooter with yours truly. 866-96-POTUS is the number to call up. It's 866-96-POTUS. Back with more of you with yours truly in a minute. Don't go away. 33 minutes past hour number two back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly. Stephen A. coming at you as I love to do every week. Now, I'm sorry, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio, channel 124. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. To the phones we go. Thanks again to Governor Andy Beshear for coming on the show with us, Harry Dunn, in the first hour, congressional candidate for Maryland's 5th Congressional District. Both Harry Dunn and Governor Andy Beshear for coming on the show. Really, really appreciate it. Had a couple of Democrats on the line today. Just as a reminder, some caller called in about a week or two ago complaining that I didn't have enough Democrats or enough Republicans. And I had my researchers looked it up. Had 32 guests since I started September 17th. 16 Democrats, 16 Republicans. As I tell everybody, I'm going to always be fair. I'm a black man who's an independent, and I'm a centrist. And most of the time, I vote left. No doubt about that. That's true. But I'm not beyond voting for Republican. And I'm a black man, and I don't believe just because you're a conservative, that makes you racist. I don't fall for that nonsense. I listen to your policies, your beliefs, what you stand for, and I judge accordingly. And people have a right, politically speaking, with their policy preferences, to vote and believe and favor any side they choose. I don't judge like that. I never have, and I never will, regardless of how strongly people try to compel me to do otherwise. Oh, he's got to pick a side. He got to take a side. Shut the hell up. No, I don't. Perfect example. I'm pro-choice. I'm sorry, I'm pro-life. I apologize. I'm pro-life. Don't necessarily believe in abortion. But you know what else I don't believe in? I don't believe in telling a woman what to do with her body. Therefore, I vote pro-choice. Because even though I'm not for abortions, I don't have a right to tell a woman what to do. So again, pro-life, but vote pro-choice because of what I just explained to you. People say you can't do that. Yes, the hell I can. Yes, the hell I can. I'm all for immigrants and migrants being in this country. It's a gorgeous mosaic, the United States of America. It's what makes us great. Immigrants help build this country. But do we need open borders with 12, 15, 20 million people crossing the borders legally? No. We don't need that. Which is why I said Trump was right to close the borders. If Biden didn't open it, I would have never said he should close it. I fall along the lines of the Obama belief. Get out the worst amongst us. But even still, if you cross the border illegally, that can't be allowed. Period. That's how it goes. But how you do it, how you address it, can't look like what we're seeing in the streets with ICE. Because that's not America. Mask, knocking on people's doors, all of this other stuff, stopping people in the streets, going to their jobs. I thought you were after the criminals. Hit them. Because I think the number that I read was like about 14% of the people that have been detained and ultimately deported or whatever were criminals? What about the other 85%+? What about them? Just saying. Just saying. 866-96-POTUS. That is the number to call up. Back to the phones we go. Let's go to Rob in New York. You're live with Stephen A. Rob, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, Stephen A. Before I talk about ICE, I just wanted to say we need some more brick on daytime TV.
He's coming. But he's coming. Don't you worry about it. He's
coming. Good to hear.
Brick's in the house. What's up?
One of the things, my main concern is I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I see everybody talking about eliminating ICE, and it always bothers me with my party that they talk about eliminating something, but they, something like you brought up earlier in the show, that they don't say, okay, once you eliminate it, how are you going to handle this situation? I just want to see what your thoughts are on this whole eliminating ICE, and I totally agree that—
I do not agree with eliminating ICE. I do agree with reeling them in. I think that we're paying too much attention to their actions and not what they're being compelled to do because their jobs are being threatened by the present administration if they don't meet quota numbers and what have you, having detained and ultimately be in a position to deport certain numbers of migrants each and every single month. I think that's what we're missing in all of this. I mean, we keep saying ICE, 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 and we're not thinking about who they have to answer to. ICE has been around for a long time. When you think about Border Czar Tom Homan, well, what do you want me to say? He worked for Obama and Trump. We didn't complain when he was doing his job for Obama. And he had no problem with the job and the task that Obama had him to do. Nor did he have that problem with Trump. He only had an issue with Biden because Biden opened the borders. So again, if you worked for both Republican and Democratic administrations, and there was no issue with you until now, clearly you're not the issue. The administration is the issue. And that's what we should be focusing on. See, a lot of people, when you point to ICE, that's just, you know, that's prop. That's prop work. You know, you posing for the cameras. You want to really get down to the nitty gritty. You've got to wield a level of influence that gets the Trump administration to scale back their actions. Plain and simple. We saw Mr. Lyons on Capitol Hill coming to the defense of the Trump administration and ICE. That's where the real problem lies. Because you have so many people fawning over this man. Have you noticed people that work under Trump, how they talk? I just want to say, it could be for something as simple as spray painting the building. I just want to sit up there and just take a moment to thank the great, phenomenal leadership of the president. It's like it's a requirement to fawn over him the way that they do. It's embarrassing because you're flagrantly displaying your lack of objectivity when it comes to doing your job, because the requirement is to fawn over this man. Look at Pam Bondi on Capitol Hill. I'm quite sure she has every right to defend herself. But look at how rude she is to these elected officials. And in fairness, some of them are very rude to her too. But it's like you going up on Capitol Hill and you calling out and you're calling folks names, and don't get me started with Cash Patel and how he talked to them, because that's what Trump wants you to do. It's not enough to disagree. You can't show decorum and professionalism. What you have to do is you have to be rude. You have to be acerbic. You have to be juvenile. You have to do all of these things because you're basically giving the representatives on Capitol Hill a big F you. That's the requirement that appears to exist with the Trump administration. And that is the problem. So rather than talk about ICE, ICE has been around. The real issue is who they're answering to. These same officers would not be acting that way with Obama. These same officers would not be acting that way under George W. These same officers would not be operating that way under Hillary Rodham Clinton or Bill Clinton. They're acting that way under him. Look at Kristi Noem. Again, I'm not talking about their job and how they perform their duties. That's for the elected officials and those intimately aware of the details involving their occupational tendencies to address and to judge. I'm saying, look at how they act. They don't invoke peace. They don't invoke professionalism. They invoke chaos. They invoke disruptiveness. They invoke disrespect. And in fairness, the Democrats ain't much better because they provoke it. They play a role in provoking it too. And the rest of us are left like suckers having to be exposed to this nonsense. And we're at the mercy of this nonsense because they're elected officials overseeing law enforcement arms within our government. What can I do if the FBI come knocking on my door? I'm a perfectly law-abiding citizen. What can you do with Homeland Security? You know, you can get by it. You can get through it. It doesn't negate the chaos they cause you in the meantime. That's what we're dealing with. Because they have a license to do so. Because our leader, our president, doesn't know how to act like one. Juvenile tendencies. This is why, this is the number one reason I said I didn't vote for him. Because of this kind of nonsense. He won't stop. He gets worse. And that's why you have to have checks and balances. Because nothing else is going to keep him in check, Rob. Nothing.
Well, I think they follow their leader, and that's the way it is. And you said it 100% correctly.
Thanks a lot, Rob. I appreciate the call. 866-96-POTUS. Back with your calls to close out the show in a minute. It's Stephen A. Straight Shooter in the house. Don't go away. Past hour number. Two back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly. Some news, just want to say, I brought up the 14%. The Department for Homeland Security had responded to that story by CBS, by the way, where CBS highlighted that 14% of nearly 400,000 individuals arrested by ICE in President Trump's first year back in power had violent criminal records. But here's the catch that CBS glossed over. Many heinous crimes are not classified as nonviolent. DHS Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin said, quote, drug trafficking, distribution of child pornography, burglary, fraud, DUI, embezzlement, solicitation of a minor, human smuggling are all categorized as nonviolent crimes. 70% of those illegal aliens arrested under POTUS, Trump, and Secretary Noem have pending criminal charges or prior convictions. That's according to Department for Homeland Security Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin. They got their comeback, their pushback, no doubt about it. Let's get to the phones before we get on out of here for the evening and for the week. Let's go to Greg in Michigan. You're live with Stephen A. Go ahead, Greg.
Quick. Stephen A., Mr. Positive, fantastic show, my friend.
All right, go ahead, my man. Make your point. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what is our fascination with the Epstein files? Do we want justice, or are we intrigued by the darkness of the human spirit?
Well, we don't know. We don't know. What we do know is that people who have been victimized, who, by the way, were children, little girls, have a right, if we know who victimized them, to make sure those folks are brought to justice. We do know that.
Yes.
There's no way around that.
You got it. Have a great night.
Then you do the same, Greg. Thank you so much. Michael in Connecticut, you're live with Stephen A. What's up?
Hey, Stephen A., how's it going?
Thank you. Thank you for calling. What's going on, bro?
Yes, sir. So Donald Trump has stated multiple times, like publicly, that he believes that Dems will try to impeach him if they take back the Senate or the House or both. So we've seen through recent elections, they've been either winning or overperforming in Trump districts. In your opinion, do you think they should embrace what he's saying about impeaching him possibly and J.D. Vance, or should they focus on what they've been focusing on?
Focus on the bigger issues. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this. Let me tell you something right now. The hell with impeaching Donald Trump. Just let him go away. What does that do for the country? I mean, all he's going to do is say it's a witch hunt. It's vindictiveness. It's vengeance. It's going to give us a reason to look at the Democrats and say, oh, you were just out to get them. It's going to give the Republicans a reason to say, see, we're being victimized by them and nobody's running the damn country. I'm talking about the House and the Senate, not the president. Enough of this. Enough of this. You convicted him 34 felony counts. How many more convictions can they give him, Michael? How many more? What did he do? Not only did he not go to jail, he went to the White House. Stop wasting our time with all of this. Let me tell you something. Can I say this to you, Michael? Can I say this to you, Michael?
No, go ahead.
If I had a president of the United States, let's say, for example, it was an election right now and Stephen A. won the presidency. I tell Trump, we're leaving you alone. Get the hell out of here. Just go away. Shut up and go live the rest of your life. You're 80. Just go. Stop bothering us. Just go away. Let's get back to some level of normalcy. And by the way, in fairness, not only would I tell that to him, I'll tell that to extreme leftists that want transgender boys transitioning to girls playing in girls' sports too. Go get out of here with that. We got to get back to normalcy. You're messing with the health of the country. And I'm not speaking against anybody from the LGBTQ community or anything like that. I'm simply saying this stuff that's on the fringes that serve to divide and distract us, go away. Just get out of here. We're sick of y'all. Trump is a nightmare. He does nothing but breed chaos. Go away. Live your life. Take your children and your grandchildren and your wife and everybody and just go. If I were the president now, then we ain't wasting taxpayer money going after you. No, go away. Just tell me you'll shut up and go live your life in peace. Stay on a golf course, work on your tan and all of this. Just go. Just go. That's all I want. You don't hear nothing from Bush. You don't hear nothing. You don't hear much from Obama. You don't hear much from George W. Bush. You don't hear from these people. Just go away. Just go. Ken in California, go ahead.
Hey, Stephen A. This is Ken.
I just said it was Ken in California, bro. I just said that. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you had mentioned about the one thing about, you know, you say Trump. Pretty much where the Democrats are throwing people in jail just for simply not agreeing with them or making you lose your jobs. People came over illegally, okay? No rather they came over, the border or whatnot, or lose their, their green cards or whatnot.
Ken? Yes. Can you hear me, Ken?
I'm listening.
You don't have to elaborate, bro. I know you're right. Let me tell you something right now. When people were losing their jobs for pronouncing the wrong pronoun, that wasn't Republicans. That wasn't the GOP. Those are the Dems. Those are the Dems. You know, every time, you know, there is no question that when it comes to cancel culture, the Dems have their fingerprints written all over it. Ain't nobody absolving them from that. Hell no. That's not Trump and them. You know, now, Trump has gotten back into office and has exercised, you know, similar traits he complained about. What you bothering Jimmy Kimmel for? What you bothering Stephen Colbert for? Now, I understand that they don't like you and maybe late night monologues shouldn't be dominated by insulting you all the damn time. But this is a free country. They are exercising their right to free speech. They do have an audience that likes that. What you worried about them for? You suing networks and stuff like that because you don't like the things that people say, swearing up and down that malicious editing is going on and all these excuses. All you doing is doing everything that you can to try to influence one's right to free speech. So that makes him no better, but it ain't a bunch of Republicans doing that. It ain't the GOP doing that. That's him. That's him. I've interviewed a lot of these guys. I'm not going to accuse them of that. I have no problem talking to Republicans. Zero. They make a lot of sense on a lot of occasions. Now, some people like Jasmine Crockett rightfully points out that they got to have more of a spine. But in the same breath, she's the winner. So she's going to find a way. I think she might win the U.S. Senate seat personally. I definitely think she's going to be the Democratic nominee. But everybody ain't as brave. Everybody ain't as outspoken. Everybody ain't as articulate. Everybody ain't as vibrant. And most importantly, everybody ain't as fearless as her. I might be, but a lot of cats in elected office are not. They're leery of losing their elected seats. So they react accordingly. So when she gets on that for not having a spine, she might be partially right about that, but there's a reason for it. Remember when I asked Ted Cruz, the man insulted your wife, why you didn't say anything to him? Man, I got 31 million people to tend to cater to. I can't be worried about something like that. I didn't like it. I spoke up about it. But at some point in time, we got a government to run. And I got to be bigger than that. That's essentially what he said. Some people might think differently. He didn't. He's still in the Senate seat, though, making noise. We got to remember that. Ken, I got
to
go.
Has it, right. Go ahead. Yeah, exactly. You don't want me to talk. Trump has every right to have an opinion. Trump has every right to have an opinion between, like me and you. He has every right. He did not fire Jimmy Kimmel and all these other things. And like you said, having things evenly as far as
I did not say he fired them, Ken. I said that he was wishing for them to be fired and spoke out against them. And as president of the United States, knowing things like the First Amendment, etc., that would be something that you would think he would not engage in. But he did. That's all. I didn't say he didn't have a right.
Engaging in things off topic. Was Obama talking about things that he really was pushing in the race narrative? And when the laws finally came
out. Hold
it.
When Obama did something, there were plenty of people calling him out on it, too. A matter of fact, even after he left office, they were talking about how hypocritical the left was because they were complaining about some of the things that Trump did, accusing Obama, albeit a bit more discreetly, of trying to do the same thing, to have the heavy hand of the White House come down upon people. They were complaining about it, whatever legitimacy to it, you can debate all day, but the bottom line is they were complaining, they were saying something.
Every president has something to say. It's just that I listen to you more about what Trump is saying. Over half of the
time. Tell me. Oh, shut up! I'm on the air just September. I didn't have a political show when Obama was in office. What the hell do you expect me to do? Bring it up on SportsCenter?
You want to leave?
He was the president. I was doing sports. I didn't have a political show. Otherwise, I'd have called him out for that. That's the bottom line. You calling up here bitching and moaning about it. Why? Because we going to criticize Trump? Everything he does is perfect? Man, you know what? Call back next week. And by the way, I apologize for telling you to shut up. I should have said be quiet. Shut up is a bit rude. Shut up is a bit rude. I shouldn't have done that. But I'll deal with you next week when we have more time. I'm going to give you time. I ain't going to let you hide. Until next week, everybody. Stephen A. signing off. Straight Shooter. Peace and love.